Today's episode of the Can Be Now podcast is brought to you by Gustafson Insurance, business, home, and auto insurance made simple. For a free quote, call 503-266-2216.
How much bikes are there?
I'd say there's 100% of bikes out there.
There was just like dead radio silence for like 3 seconds. That's how my jokes usually go.
Prison was probably the best experience I've ever had in my life.
Hope you didn't get in a car wreck from that hilarious story that Frankie told.
It is like Comedy Central around here tonight.
He's got like one line. I'm in so much pain.
Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
And I'm Tyler Clausen.
The State House of Representatives passed the Student Success Act Wednesday, a new education package hailed by Democrats as a landmark investment in Oregon's future. House Bill 3427 emerged out of months of dialogue between the committee and educators, parents, and business leaders with the intention of addressing a wide range of issues in public education. Specifically, the state would invest in more behavioral and mental health supports and early learning opportunities, especially for low income students, minority students, and students with disabilities who tend to graduate at lower rates. The hoped for outcomes would be to increase high school graduation rates, improve the number of students reading on grade level by third grade, and address chronic absenteeism and disruptive behaviors that are regularly seen in Oregon classrooms. Certainly, those are noble goals, but much concern is centered around how the plan will be funded, specifically through a new business tax that would allow certain tax commercial activities on companies that bring in at least $1 million annually, while slightly lowering personal income tax rates in all but the highest earning tax brackets. It's estimated that the hybrid approach would raise $2 billion in new revenue per biennium, which would be solely dedicated to funding education improvements. Tristan Gingrich, operator manager for Gingrich Farm Productions Incorporated, a large blueberry and hazelnut farming operation located outside of Canby, was among those who expressed concerns about particular aspects of the bill that Oregon hazelnut growers say would put family-owned agricultural processors at a competitive disadvantage. Agricultural producers maintain a delicate balance with each other for the slivers of profit we operate on, Gingrich said in an April 2016 letter submitted as testimony. HB 3427 will make it even harder for family-owned companies to be competitive with businesses structured as cooperatives. The Oregon House Republican office was far more scathing in its condemnation of the bill, which they described as a hidden sales tax and a massive convoluted $2 billion tax scheme. House Republican leader Carl Wilson said, quote, "Oregonians deserve more than an ill-considered $2 billion new hidden sales tax that will cost them dearly. There is no reason for Democrats to rush a bill through with over 2 months left in the season. This will cost working families almost every time they have to buy a product or a service." The measure now heads to Oregon Senate for consideration. Clackamas County Sheriff Craig Roberts announced last week in an open letter to his deputies and staff that they would no longer be responding to most calls for service that originate from the city of Portland. "I will not place you in an unnecessary personal and professional risk," Sheriff Roberts said in an email to his staff. Roberts said his command staff and executive team have been actively addressing the risk of deputies' work within the city of Portland. "The process has included hearing safety concerns from deputies who answer routine calls in Portland and holding conversations with other city, state, and federal law enforcement leaders, including Portland Police Chief Danielle Outlaw," which is the greatest name that a police chief can have. "As a result of these and other assessments, the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office will pull back all staff responding to service calls within the city of Portland in the coming weeks." Robert said that it's not a decision that he makes lightly, and he commended Portland Police Chief Outlaw for her officers and the difficult work that they do every day. Ultimately, though, he felt that he had to make the decision that was best for his deputies and constituents. As sheriff, your safety and the safety of Clackamas County residents remains at the top of my priorities, he said. Our work is dangerous enough without adding unnecessary risks when responding to calls for services in the city of Portland. Robert's decision parallels a similar move by Washington County Sheriff Patrick Garrett in February. Investigators with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, Oregon State Police, and Clackamas County Sheriff's Office are continuing to look into the circumstances of the blaze that devastated an unfinished three-story apartment complex in the Villebois neighborhood of Wilsonville almost exactly 1 month ago. They're saying that the March 31st fire has been deemed incendiary, meaning that it was ignited by a person under circumstances in which it should not have been ignited. However, this does not mean that the fire was set intentionally. They're not sure about that quite yet. An important note is that the fire has not been determined to be arson. A press release from investigators said, "Arson refers to a crime in which a fire or explosion was set maliciously, intentionally, or recklessly. Many details of the blaze, including intent, have not been determined at this time. No one was hurt in the fire, which broke out in the early morning hours, but dozens were displaced. Officers are now estimating the total damage to be at $10 million. Last week was Kindness Week at the Camby School District. Teachers and student leaders encouraged students to spend the week walking in another's shoes as they modeled kindness, friendship, trust, gratitude, and empathy. It started on Monday with a special guest speaker, Esteban Gass, who shared stories from his life as a Puerto Rican immigrant and talked about how to get better at kindness. And wrapped up Thursday with a benefit concert by Camby High School teacher Isabel Walker and Luz Alana Mendoza of E. La Bamba. I hope I got all of those words right. Assistant Principal Kari Sloan joined us on the line recently to talk about the experience of Kindness Week and the impact it had on the students. We'll bring you that interview, followed by a song from the concert by Isabel Walker.
Create a culture of kindness at our school and make it extend much beyond a week. We feel like having a really positive school culture would benefit our students in a variety of ways, including mental health. And so we've really had kindness initiatives going on for the last couple of years, but really concentrating them in on this week to really zone in and then expanding beyond. So we've had staff shout outs where staff can give staff special sort of kudos for doing something really nice. Students have been able to give staff kudos. Staff has been able to give students kudos. And then we got our student groups involved, and they each did lunchtime activities last week. So we had Thankful Thursday, When You Need Me Wednesday, that type of thing. We made thank you notes to people. We made thinking of you notes for people. We did kindness bears where people took a candy or something and it said, you know, text one of your family members that you love them, and they got the candy if they accepted the dare, and that type of thing. We did Freaky Friday where kids were asked to walk in somebody else's shoes, which the theme of the week was other shoes, really trying to build that idea of empathy and that everybody is fighting a hard battle and you just don't know what's going on with other in other people's shoes until you really walk in their shoes, and to be kind always because you just don't know what's going on. We had signage all over the school. We did advisory activities leading up to Kindness Week so that students were prepared for it. Every student sort of made a shoe where they could write whatever they wanted. Some of them talked about their journey, which some, you know, our students have had pretty tough journeys in life.
Sure.
And those are posted all over the school. So if you were at Camby High School right now, you'd see a path of shoes as people literally or figuratively, I guess, walk in other shoes around the school. And we just really embraced the idea of kindness and what does it mean. Teachers were asked to talk about it in their classes and just really hone in on creating a culture of kindness throughout the school.
Yeah. Sounds like a lot of fun, a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, it was fun. It's fun to see the kids do different things in different clubs that you don't necessarily get to see out in front of people do different activities.
Yeah.
So that was neat too. Yeah. Well, we are so grateful and lucky in Canby to have such a supportive community. And, you know, we did go through a tough time at the high school last spring, and the community really rallied around us, and we're so grateful for them. And so with the support of the Canby Suicide Prevention Task Force and the Canby Rotary and Kiwanis and Cuts Forests Thriftway and the Canby Talk About It campaign, we were really able to put on some of these bigger events that we normally can't without that kind of support. And being kind is, the research all shows that creating a culture of kindness or empathy is really what supports students' mental health. You can't just say, you know, yes, you certainly want to get a lot of resources for students that are currently in crisis, but you want to do everything that you can to be proactive and create a culture where students that maybe are struggling with mental health issues know the resources that they have and have friends and or a culture around them that is supportive before they get to the point where they're considering taking their own life. So we're trying to do both, be proactive and do this kindness week stuff, and then also make sure that we have better supports for our students when they are in a crisis of mental health or they need support in a more sort of reactive way.
Yeah, yeah. That's awesome. And I guess, you know, one thing as well is just kind of these small acts of kindness can pay really big dividends. That's a big part of the message.
Yeah, you just never know who you do a small act of kindness. You don't know what sort of impact that may have on somebody. And so you just want to make kindness normal, right?
Yeah.
We want to make kindness part of who we are and what we do.
More than 1.2 million Americans receive internet, TV, and telephone services from community cooperatives like Direct Link. They believe that their role revolves around partnerships, whether sponsoring a local event, hosting educational classes, or investing in fiber internet technology. Direct Link is here for our community because they are a part of our community.
Beyond just working in Canby, most of DirectLink's employees live here as well. DirectLink's investment in the local area reaches past business interests and extends into the everyday lives of neighbors, friends, and families. Visit them online at directlink.coop to learn more about their communication services and community activities.
Are you a small business owner or maybe thinking of investing in yourself with your very own startup? Awesome! Now all you have to do is reach potential customers at a time when consumers have never been more fragmented, more distracted, or more difficult to reach. If that sounds hard, believe me, it is. That's why I make Frankie do it.
Carrie and her team at Promotional Strategies offer strategic, purposeful solutions to build your brand with lasting promotional items that make sense for you and your company. They are creative geniuses who will deliver advertisements that people actually thank you for and will use every day. We've tried other sellers, and we trust Carrie to provide high-quality branded items that we can be proud of. Find them at 695 Southeast 1st Avenue in Canby or online at ps266swag.com. Like I always do. I'm too afraid to start an over new with anyone else. It's the same.
Frankie's guest on Canby Conversation today is Haley Verhollen. She's an amazingly talented singer-songwriter born and raised in Oregon City. She now lives and spends most of her time in Nashville, Tennessee, which of course is where you go when you want to make it big in the country music scene. But she did visit home recently and took some time out to chat with us at CTV Channel 5 Studios in Canby. Here's what she had to say.
So tell us about how you got your start. I understand that it was in a third grade music show.
Yes.
Talent show. Yes.
So my very first performance ever was, I went to Gaffney Lane Elementary School.
Okay.
And I randomly signed up for my third grade talent show.
Okay.
I was at the very end, like they had to squeeze me in, and
you
I sang
planning
America
to do
beautiful.
Music or
no, I just kind of always loved.
You're just like I'm talented, like obviously
I just love to sing.
Okay.
Like from the time I was born to now and forever.
Yeah.
So
cool.
Yeah, so I was just like, well, I feel like a daring child, I guess, so yeah. I'm gonna go out and sing America the Beautiful.
Yeah.
And I did, and that was kind of
just a redheaded thing, I think.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is, I don't know. But yeah, that's when I kind of fell in love with performing. So,
okay, cool.
Third grade.
Yeah, and like people responded well to that?
Or? Yeah, I mean, my mom always tells me this story of at the talent show. She would hear
oh,
me sing all the time.
She's probably crying.
So she was really like happy that I was out there. But I guess this lady next to her like reached over and was like, wow, she's really good. Like, who is this girl? And she didn't know that was my mom.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and so
oh,
she was like, that was a really proud moment for me.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
That's really cool. And yeah. So that was your peak. And
yes. Yeah, yeah. I've done nothing since then. No.
Right. So what is it about performing that you enjoy so much?
I think that it just allows me a chance to just forget everything that's going on and just like put all my emotion and all my passion in one spot.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's a lot of things that go on in this world that are kind of discouraging and and whatnot. And I think performing really allows me the chance to just be free of that for 3 minutes and 30 seconds for that song, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So
usually performances are longer, but
yeah. But like, you know,
that's
so,
cool.
And I like to,
it's a little bit of therapeutic for you.
It's so therapeutic. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that that's really what drew me to music in the first place was just an outlet. So.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, one thing about us humans, like we like to do things that we're good at, right? You know,
yeah.
And that's healthy for us, our mental health and just our well-being and, you know, who we see ourselves as.
Yes.
So maybe that's part of it for you.
Yeah.
You are an incredible singer.
Thank you.
I think I first heard you sing. It was a video on Facebook. You were singing at a Trailblazers game.
Oh, yes.
At the Moda Center.
Oh, my gosh.
The Star Spangled Banner, of course.
Yes.
And I was just like, got to get this girl on our show. Like, she's
I'm so glad
amazing.
You saw that. Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it got like a bajillion likes and all this. Like,
it was,
obviously,
yeah.
other people were enjoying it as well. Where does that voice come from? Do you have to work at it like much harder than I would imagine? Or is it just the way it is?
I think it's kind of just the way it is.
Yeah.
I have done very minimal. I think I did like half a year of singing lessons when I was like 12. Mm.
And they were just like, we don't have anything more to teach you.
No, I don't even know why I stopped, but it was just kind of one of those things I maybe phased out of or whatever, sure, and didn't really go back. But so I don't really have any training, but I do what I feel, you know what I mean? And wherever it comes from a place that's just deep within with like a lot of passion, and it just flows out like that. So it doesn't really take much work for me to be able to put that passion in my voice.
So I just hate you even more now. I'm a terrible singer. So you are, country music is your thing. Yeah. Why?
I just grew up on it. Sure. I grew up kind of outdoorsy. I went hunting and fishing a lot, and that's just kind of what I was raised on.
Did you grow up in the country?
No. I was kind of close to it, but I wasn't like on any land or anything. Yeah. We just did a lot of outdoorsy stuff, riding and, you know. So I think I just... That's just kind of what fits that lifestyle, and I just love the storytelling aspect of it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, and so segueing into that, because you write a lot of your own songs. Yes. Are all of your own songs?
Most of my... Well, yeah. I've written anything I've recorded and put out, I've written or been a co-writer on.
And your songs are great. They're really fun.
Thank you.
Where does that come from?
So, I mean, I live in Nashville now, so it's a co-writing town. So I got there and I'd never co-written before and never really been opened up to it and whatnot.
What does that mean?
So you sit down in a room with just somebody else or two other people or whatever, and you all come up with a song. So everybody comes with ideas, and you flesh your ideas out, or you start something fresh.
Where do the other people come from?
So you find other people through avenues like networking.
Okay.
You go out to shows.
So you know who they are. Like, it's set up. You don't just walk randomly into a room.
But also there are companies that like...
Oh, they'll match you.
They'll match you. Yeah. Like, they'll listen to your stuff and say, I think your style matches well with Joe or whoever, you know, and you'll set up a write. And a lot of the times your first write's kind of like a first date. So you're spending the first half hour just getting to know each other. And,
right. Appetizers.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. Yeah. So
first round of drinks.
Yeah. So that's kind of, everybody kind of gets in a room and we all just decide on a song and we just flush it out.
That's really interesting. So for your piece of that, for your side of that, what do you feel like you bring to it? Because like I said, your songs are really fun. They feel like they're just kind of talking about life, but in a really honest, straightforward way. But like I said, just really kind of funny and just kind of having fun with it.
Yeah. So well, the real stuff is the title track to that EP right there. Yes, and that song in particular, that's the song on there that I wrote all by myself and was able, and I just...
It was the real stuff.
It was the real stuff, and I just wanted to portray, you know, that song in particular, just wanted to portray a message of, like, balling on a budget and being 100% okay with it. Like, and so that song came from... Every idea comes from a different space, whether it's a firsthand experience or you heard a story about somebody else. That one in particular started, I was playing at the Wild Hare in Oregon City, and my dad had a jacket on, and we were all sitting at this table, and he wanted to get up to go get a drink or something. He takes his pleather jacket off, and he goes, "It's pleather, you guys. It's not worth any money. Don't steal my jacket. Yeah. Like, leave it here because it's my favorite one, whatever." And I was like, wow, well, that's my life. Like, I shop at Goodwill. I buy all my stuff on clearance. Like, what could I put into a song that talks about not caring about, you know, not having Michael Kors and Ray-Bans and all these expensive brands, you know? So that kind of sparked that idea. And then just pulling from all my personal experience of...
Cool.
Yeah, so... Yeah. But, you know, other songs are different. So just, it depends.
You were going to call it the pleather stuff, but your dad goes copyright issues.
Yeah, I was like, I can't, no.
Cool. Well, you were telling me about a cool show that you did last night.
Yes.
And I was wanting to hear more about representation of women in country music. That's kind of a big deal right now.
It's huge. Yeah. And there's...
Not something I'm super familiar with, so tell me about it.
So there is just... For a while now, but especially right now, there's just been a very... It's women in country music are very underrepresented, like by labels, by radio stations. At any given time, you could look at the top 40 chart, and they're out of 40 songs, less than 5 typically are female.
Yeah.
And it's all the same, like 3 to 5 people. So when all these newcomer, you know... men are coming in and, you know,
able to take off.
Yeah, exactly. Which I'm so happy. Like, I have friends that are taking off and I'm so happy for everybody. I just wish that the playing field was a little more equal. Mm. I had a friend whose manager went to this networking event and is always trying to plug her and whatnot, just to get more opportunities opened up. And she was talking extensively with this businessman in the music industry and for like a half hour about this artist that she was representing. Yeah. And so finally he goes, okay, so what's his name? And she goes, oh, no, it's a girl. And then said the name. And he goes, oh, well, never mind. What? And he just kind of rolled his eyes and was like, girls, women don't sell. Yeah. Women's music don't sell. People don't want to hear what they have to say. And it's just...
That's really heartbreaking, though.
So heartbreaking.
Like, to obviously the message, the talent and everything has them interested. And then just because it's a woman? Like, that's hard.
So it's really discouraging. But it's also encouraging because it makes us want to go the extra mile to make the change and really present this idea that we're so underrepresented in country music to people so that it can start to change.
Yeah.
You know, by calling your local radio stations, emailing, tweeting CMT and saying, listen, we do want to hear the females. We know they have something that's worthwhile to say, you know? So it really starts with just spreading the message that there's a big difference in playing field, you know, fairness.
Is that the big thing what that executive said, just as far as like there's this perception that it's harder to sell a female country singer?
Yep, okay. That's exactly it. Because it's all about money.
Yeah.
And so record labels...
It's not like they're not there. You know what I mean? Like sometimes that's just the way, you know, like there's a lot of times less female firefighters just because there's less female, or whatever. But in this case,
the
record labels aren't interested.
I know just right now, like I could probably list 50 different women in Nashville who all have something different to offer that's absolutely incredible. And there's way more than that, but I'm just talking about people that I know.
Yeah.
That you know, people don't give the time of day to just because she's a female or whatever. And, you know, the whole money thing comes into it because obviously record labels need money to stay open. And so I get that, but they're also not giving us a chance to even show
to
them.
Sell. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's just not fair.
Yeah. Well, just so you know, I have a bunch of male country singers trying to get on the Cameo Now podcast. I say no. Only.
Yes. No.
No, I'm just kidding. But you had a show in Oregon City that was all female country singers.
Yeah. So it was actually in Portland at the Ponderosa.
I'm sorry. You're right.
Yeah.
You said
no problem.
That. Yeah.
And it was the Northwest Homegrown Hellraiser show.
Okay.
So it was, let's see, there was one, two, there was, I think, four or five acoustic acts and then three bands.
Yeah.
So the full bands were myself and then Jesse Lee and Brittany Kellogg.
Okay.
And all those girls are just killing it and they're really talented. And we had such a blast last night just coming together. And a show like that, the place was packed. We sold VIP out. Like,
cool.
It was a successful night. And that proves right there that the fact that these people drove all the way out to Portland to support an all-female show, that proves that they want to hear females sing.
Yeah.
So
it was just no country music though. No, I'm just kidding.
I know, right? Well, no, they're all coming from Oregon.
Okay, good, good, good. Cool.
No, but it's just, it was a really important night, and I just
that's awesome.
Yeah,
yeah.
So it was awesome.
You guys
really
were all
successful.
Performing together, or just you had your
so
own sets?
So we had our own little sets, and then at the end of the night, Jesse and Brittany and I we went up and sang a song.
Yeah.
So,
cool.
Yeah, that was really fun.
Cool. Well, do you have any shows coming up around here? You'll be in the area. You live in Nashville, but you'll be around this summer.
So
any place where people can come see you?
Yeah, I'm actually going to be, I'm here for, let's see, here until May 13th. So I'm going to be playing, my schedule's always on my website and whatever, but I'm playing the Ponderosa again on May 2nd.
Okay.
But as far as summertime, I am coming back and playing some shows in the summertime, and that's just going to be a to-be-announced thing because I don't have the exact dates.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Cool. And, you know, other than that, what's going on with you or what's new? Are you plugging the new album? Anything
else?
We're
still – so it's coming up on – it's been out for about a year.
Okay.
Coming up on a year.
Cool.
And – we got a really good response with that.
It's a great album.
Thank you. Yeah. It was crowdfunded. So.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
Yeah, so we raised.
I wish there had been more male vocal. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, right? I know, right?
No,
that's so funny.
You did a great job with the songs, the singing, the music's really catchy, you know.
Thank you. Yeah. So, yeah, we did really. I'm excited about that still and will always be excited about it.
Yeah.
I think we're about to head into the studio, though, and record another single or two.
Okay.
And release that another two. To be determined on the date.
Yeah.
I have an idea of when, but I have to announce that first.
Right. Okay.
But, yeah. So really excited about that. Cool. And then my life just kind of revolves around writing every single day. So I literally pump out like 3 to 5 songs a week, and I'm always seeing what I want to record next, you know? So just,
Well, you have a couple songs that you graciously agreed to perform for us.
Yes, I'll do some new ones.
Okay. Awesome.
Cool. So I wrote a song called It's Tennessee with two friends of mine, and it's just a song kind of about having to make that decision to not, kind of break up with your hometown and move to chase a dream in Tennessee. So it's playing off of the phrase, it's not you, it's me. So the hook of the song is, it's not you, it's Tennessee.
Yeah, like that.
So it was just a really... We started off with a completely different idea in general, and... It was about a relationship breaking up, and then randomly I said, it's not you, it's Tennessee. And then we were like, wait a second, this could be like a Chasing Your Dream song.
Yeah.
Let's write that. That sounds cool. So we just sat down and wrote it.
Cool. I'm excited.
So this song is called It's Tennessee, and I wrote this one with my good friends Kyle James and Stephen Cade. Just a sunset in that rear view. Headed outbound of this two-lane town, dragging my roots. Dad's truck packed up with most of my life. It's not as heavy as what I'm leaving behind, but I know I gotta go. No, I'm not running, I'm chasing down a dream. Even worried about the state I'm in, I wouldn't have to leave. But if I didn't fall in, go all in, pour my heart out on these streets, I'd be stuck with the what ifs, caught up in that same routine. So trust me, yeah, trust me, it's not you, it's Tennessee. Breaking in that rear view, and another one in my chest, I'm about to break through. Well, God knows I'm giving up a lot of good. If I could give my all to both, I would. But just know I had to go. No, I'm not running, I'm chasing down a dream. If it weren't about the state I'm in, I wouldn't have to leave. But if I didn't fall in, go all in, pour my heart out on these streets, I'd be stuck with the what ifs, caught up in that same routine. So trust me, yeah, trust me, it's not you, it's Tennessee. Treating that hometown porch swinging like shot in the dark under neon lights, yeah. Oh, no, I'm not running, I'm chasing down a dream. If it weren't about the state I'm in, it's Tennessee. This one is my next single. It's called Sunday Morning Love You. Mm-hmm.
jumping off the deep in the thrill of a downtown life. Spinning on the dance floor, watching those drinks pour. The band's got the groove just right. We're more than a Saturday night. Oh, and I can't wait for that sunrise. I love to Sunday morning love you. Feels like heaven right beside you. Oh, lost in the covers, lost in your eyes. It feels like the first time, every time. I love to Sunday morning love you. I love to Sunday morning love you. You know I like the whiskey, getting kind of tipsy and thinking about us alone. Dialing up a taxi, kissing in the backseat, holding you the whole way home. We're more than a Saturday night. Oh, I can't wait for that sunrise. I love to Sunday morning love you. It feels like heaven right beside you. Oh, lost in the covers, lost in your eyes. It feels like the first time. That paper hit the door, leave last night's coals on the floor. Yeah, all that stuff can wait, 'cause I'm gonna Sunday morning love you. I'm gonna Sunday morning love you.
So much.
Yeah, of course.
So that is the amazingly talented Haley Verhollen. Her new album is The Real Stuff. You can check that out. And your website where you can find live shows you might be doing, HaleyVerhollen.com.
Yeah.
HaleyVerhollen.
You did it.
.com. I did it.
That's
Thank
impressive.
You so much for being here at CTV and for being on the KMBNOW podcast.
No problem.
Best
Thanks
of
for
luck
having.
In your career and
Thank
wherever
you.
It takes
hope,
you.
I hope to be back someday.
I hope it brings you back.
Yeah.
I hope it doesn't leave you in Nashville
sure.
forever. So. Thank you. Beer is practically an art form in the Pacific Northwest, and the FOB Taproom in Canby is one of the best places to enjoy all your old favorites and your new favorites. They have a constantly rotating selection of 36 of the best craft beer, ciders, and wines from right here in Oregon and around the world. Hey Tyler, do you know what FOB stands for? That's right, it's Friends of Beer, and that's what they are.
Oh, well, the FOB Taproom also hosts an awesome trivia night on Wednesdays with tap takeovers and new release parties every month. There's always something going on, so come on by. Find them at the Canby Place on Southwest Berg Parkway and on Facebook and Instagram.
See you at the FOB. FOB.
So I'm here with Derek Hill, president of Advantage Mortgage in Canby. I was wondering what's going on in the mortgage industry right now.
The mortgage industry is on fire right now. The big thing that's really exciting for us is that we are now an independent mortgage broker, which means that we can offer substantially lower rates and lower fees for our customers. For example, we just got a loan last week and the realtor said, hey, I think you should go talk to Derek at Advantage Mortgage. And sure enough, we got the borrower 3/4 better rate, and we saved them 14 grand in fees.
Cool. So where can people find you?
So office number is 503-266-5800, or they can find us on the web at findtheadvantage.com. But most people just give us a holler or they stop in.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks, Derek.
You bet. Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 1770599. Derek Hills, NMLS number 50183. Equal housing opportunity.
Welcome back, listeners. I am at Baker's Prairie Bakery in Canby, and I'm here with John Drott. He's a board member for the Canby Public Library Foundation. How are you, John?
Doing well. Just swallowing a bite of this delicious macaroon, coconut macaroon.
Well,
here.
I screwed up the intro about 3 or 4 times, so you had plenty of time at this point. I mean, I don't feel like it's my fault anymore. So,
right.
You're here to tell us about a new fundraiser and promotion and just kind of general public campaign around the Canby Public Library. Tell us about it.
That's correct. The Canby Public Library Foundation is really one of two or three organizations locally that support the library. The other one is, of course, the Friends of the Library. They're the ones that run the bookshop
right. In
the library, and they do great work every year. And then there's the library board, which is actually a city government board appointed by city council. And then we have our foundation, which is dedicated to raising, our goal is a $2 million endowment that will perpetually fund library programs and equipment and capital expenses. In perpetuity. So that's our goal. And
yeah, that's cool. Is that a model that's been seen in other smaller libraries like ours, a foundation type model? It's a little newer to me, I think.
Yeah, it's fairly typical for libraries to have both a Friends organization that does a lot of, like, you know, book sales and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then a foundation that is more focused on raising, like I said, an endowment, but in addition to that, if there are special projects that arise, they would typically be the ones that would go out and search for grants from granting organizations.
Cool.
As well. So
yeah,
we look at that multi-pronged facility. And it's more natural for example, estate planners. Hmm. Often, if they want to give money to
a
foundation
or
to a library, they typically look towards foundations
rather than
dedicated to long-term planning.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Cool. Well, obviously, there are people and we're here at the bakery. I don't know if you guys can hear what's going on in the background, but it's a working bakery, making delicious things. Like you mentioned, your coconut macaroon that you like so much, you were choking on.
Impressive place to be. If you haven't come in yet, I encourage you to.
Yeah, it's fun. Great natural light with the windows. It's in the old Starbucks location. But anyway, there obviously are people in Canby that might be interested in making some kind of gift or something in Canby, because people in Canby love our library, and that's kind of what this new promotion is about.
Yeah, I think you're right in that if I remember some of the statistics that you posted on your site recently, I think our library district now serves about 24,000 people.
Cause, yeah, I hope they were right.
Yeah, well, I'm just hoping I remember them correctly. I'm sure your statistics were correct.
Yeah.
But our district serves about 24,000 people, which is more than the people that live within Canby. So it's Canby and then the surrounding areas as well that pay the library tax and then use the Canby Public Library for the services.
Right. Yeah, I believe you're right. It was about 24,000 that live within the funding district boundaries
exactly.
of the library, and over half of that percentage have library cards and borrow materials. And then, you know, hundreds of thousands go through the library for whatever purpose, either for programs and things.
I think the statistics are they're getting somewhere around 11 or 12,000 visits a month.
Yeah.
Every month.
Yeah.
It's really one of the highest foot traffic retail locations
right.
in Canby.
Right. About 1,000 of those are because I go and then I forget my backpack and I have to come back. But still, right. It's impressive.
It is. People, and even way back in the day when we voted to tax ourselves to keep our library open, which is something that's always a challenge for people to do, Canby overwhelmingly approved the library tax district. So
yeah.
We do know that there are people out there that that feel strongly about having a good functioning library. And that's why we're doing this campaign right now, between now and the end of June, of asking people to tell us your stories as to why you love the library. Mm. And it doesn't have to be a big epic story, just a couple paragraphs. But for those of us who do love the library, we have, I mean, I could come up with postings and postings and postings,
right,
as the reasons, but
you see like a bunch of entries that are like John A. Drott, John, yes, C. Drott, exactly. John Drott Jr.
I'll come up with Jack. I'll change my first name to Jack as a nickname.
Like, I'm sensing a pattern here.
Right. But you can go to our website, for example, canbypubliclibraryfoundation.org,
yeah,
and see more information on that. And there's also a form you can fill out and tell us your story as to why you love the library, what it is that draws you there, and why it's important to you that they maintain the funding for it.
Sure.
Because not only do we get the library tax funding district money, but unfortunately, we knew even when the district passed that all that could possibly do, best case scenario, was to provide enough funding to reach a minimum Oregon Library Association values,
okay,
and standards. And that's if everything broke right. Well, it's been, I don't know, about 10 years now, and not everything has broke right. So the library is always stretching its budget dollars as far as possible to provide the services that people here in our community want and receive. Point is, if we're going to have a better than bare minimum library, which I know overwhelmingly people can be want, we're going to have to do more than just pay our tax bill.
Mm.
And so it is important for library services and for the internal growth of our community that we raise this endowment fund and can secure library funding going on forever.
Yeah.
'Cause even this year, and this happens every year, but this year we came within a hair's breadth of having to cut library hours.
Yeah, they had to do a funding amendment or budget amendment. Yeah, to the city.
And that is going to be a chronic issue every year. And hopefully we can help mitigate that by people who love the library doing just a little bit more.
Sure. So what's the end game here with this campaign? Is it to kind of have at the end, you know, hundreds of comments that you can sort of show very tangibly support, other than, like, you know, the numbers are great, but to a certain extent, it's like anyone who would provide a service, people would use that service, would be able to have numbers to show, you know, like when you're able to show stories, that's where it starts to make a little more impact. I feel, is that kind of the end goal, or mm-hmm, what are we going for here?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, statistics are fairly cold.
Yeah.
I can tell you 12,000 people went through the turnstiles last month. Okay, that's right. Just a number. But if you can tell a story of a six-year-old or person who is now in their 40s, who when they were six found refuge in the library and learned a love of learning,
yeah,
or somebody whose whole career path came directly from having spent time in the library, or I mean, it's from age 4 to 94,
right?
I mean, the library is a life, is a lifelong learning facility.
Sure.
And just hearing all the stories across all ages, across all spectrums, can show what the broad impact of what this one institution does for our community.
Cool. How long does it go, and where do people find the paper forms that you mentioned?
That's a good question. We'll have paper forms available in the library.
Okay.
And if you're a library lover, you're probably going in there.
You'll see them. Yeah.
And you can find
it's a
that
good place to grab those people.
As I mentioned, on the website as well, canbypubliclibraryfoundation.org.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's a long URL, but if you Google Canby Library Foundation, it'll probably get you faster.
Yeah, but, and we'll put out a link with our episode as well.
Super.
And how long does it go for?
It goes until the end of June.
Okay, cool. So and it'll open now. So have you started getting some entries?
Yep, yeah. We have a few now, and you can, you know, you don't have to have it publicized. I appreciate the fact, me being an introvert, that most library lovers are probably introverted, and drawing us introverts out for some publicity can be a little painful, but you can opt to not have it.
I had to handcuff you to get you here. I mean, it was kind of awkward. I don't know if Canby police are okay with it, but
it did. My wrists are still recovering.
I'll get the handcuffs back. Yeah, I'll get the handcuffs back. Don't worry, guys.
But So
it can't be anonymous.
It can be anonymous. You can say, no, I don't want this publicized, but we do appreciate hearing your stories, and sometimes we can just generalize stories as well.
Sure.
If you don't want that kind of publicity, but if you do do not care about the publicity and are willing to let us do that, that's also very helpful as well. So we're looking for all that.
Cool. All right, well, thanks so much for telling us about this, John. Go out and fill out those comment forms on the website and in the library. Let people know why and exactly how much, to what degree, you love our Canby Public Library. Thanks, John.
Super. See you guys.
The great outdoors. Sometimes you just gotta get away to a place where life is simpler. The air is clean and the nearest ringing phone is about a million miles away. One of the best places that we found is My Cowboy Cabin near Joseph, Oregon, in the heart of the Eagle Cap Wilderness.
Eagle Cap is the largest unspoiled wilderness area in Oregon, with breathtaking views of granite mountains and crystal clear lakes, and more than 500 miles of trails to explore. It's one of the premier hiking, fishing, and hunting destinations in the Pacific Northwest. My Cowboy Cabin is open from Memorial Day weekend through Labor Day weekend, and can be reserved on a weekly or monthly basis, depending on availability. With a cabin that sleeps up to 8 people,
and also a teepee that sleeps 8 or more.
That's right. It's perfect for family vacations, retreats, reunions, and more. Find out more at mycowboycabin.com.
This is Sarah Spoon from Canby's own residential real estate company, Victory Point Property Group, with your Canby real estate update for the week of March 10th, 2019. Last week, 9 homes in Canby were listed. 10 homes went sale pending with an average 43 days on the market. 3 homes sold with an average sales price of $499,667 and an average of 15 days on the market. Overall, days on the market for all listings are holding at 125, up 2 days since February 1st. If you'd like to know how much your home could sell for, or if you're interested in purchasing a home, we're your local experts. You can find us at www.victorypointhomes.com or 503-263-4700.
And that's our show. Special thanks to our guests today, Haley Verhollen and John Drott. And to all of our sponsors who really make it possible to do what we do. We encourage you to check them out and help support the local small businesses who support us. Hey, if you like what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episodes. In our next episode, we're going to introduce you to someone who you probably already know. Mike Doc Harms has been a fixture in the Canby community for almost 50 years since he opened his veterinary clinic just a few miles from the 90-acre farm where he grew up in Maxburg. This year, the Canby Rodeo Association has started a scholarship fund in honor and recognition to his decade of service to the rodeo and the Clackamas County Fair. We'll bring you our conversation with Doc Harms next time on the Canby Now podcast. And if you have a news tip, an idea for a guest we should invite on the program, or suggestions of how we can improve, please contact us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Canby Now, or on our website, canbynowpod.com.